This is a production of Cornell University.
4:03, I think we can go ahead and call our meeting to order here. And Gina, if you might want to help out with the roll call.
Sure. Uche? Nick? Heather?
Sorry, I'm here.
Okay, hi Nick.
Yeah, hi.
Heather is here.
Yeah, I'm here.
Alex? Kat? I think I saw Kat. Risa? No Risa. Jen is here. Salam? Tom? Oh no, that's ex officio, sorry. That's it, right? Did I miss anybody? Everybody else is ex officio.
Oh, Risa just joined us.
Okay, and Risa.
Yep, Risa's here. All right, well, I think with that, I believe we do have quorum then today.
Yes.
All right. We'll go ahead and get started then. Welcome everyone to our last meeting of the 2020 CJC session on to 2021 here soon. We'll jump right into the agenda items and first and foremost, just updating everyone President Pollock provided us the information last week that the code revisions were approved with some minor adjustments that were made during the meeting to solidify some of the pieces in regards to the student campus life involvement. It was brought sort of front and center into the code and the paragraph was changed up a little bit. And so we will jump right into discussion in regard to the agenda items. And I see Nick has got his hand up. We'll go and turn to Nick.
Thanks, Brandon. I just wanted to let you all know that the GPSA Executive Board is having a meeting at 4:15, so I will have to leave for that.
Thank you, Nick. Appreciate that. So is there any conversation in regards to the current code? I think, you know, so as we are aware that did approve and I attached those into the meeting minutes, that information, the codes that were approved are public content. So it's not something that is specific to our meeting and has been attached to the agenda here as well, which also makes it public information. So why don't I open the floor up to folks' thoughts, questions, concerns in regards to the Board of Trustees approval. One thing I do want to note, the meeting minutes are, clerk has been pretty packed with classwork and everything, and we've had a pretty hefty meeting schedule. So Dakota hasn't been able to get our meetings up and running. But she has said she's going to work as fast as she can. So we're probably looking at approving a lot of minutes in the beginning of next semester. So just a heads up. And we have Uche that just joined us here, Gina. So again, just opening the floor for any comments, questions, thoughts in regards to the approval of the student code of conduct, or we can jump into the next agenda item, which I think is probably a more lengthy conversation. Well, I think, why don't we, oh, I'll go ahead and recognize Risa.
Yeah, thanks, Brandon. I realize that, you know, this has been voted on and everything like that, but I mean, I do think that in terms of kind of catching people up on stuff, that one of the things that was notable was that my understanding is that the student assembly, the GPSA, and the university assembly all voted consistently on wanting to have the university assembly maintain its authority over the amendment process, right, with the collaboration with, you know, the vice president of student life, student and campus life. And that, you know, that was also consistent with what the CJC had also proposed to council's office. So do you have any other information about that? Because, I mean, it's clear that the trustees didn't agree with that, even though it was consistent across the board in terms of those governance bodies. So I wonder if anybody has any information on why the trustees didn't accept that, or, you know, I'm just curious because it would seem that with that level of unanimity that they might have had some response about it.
Thank you, Risa. I appreciate that. And one thing to note is that, yes, there were the resolutions passed from the different assemblies asking for the retaining of the UA's jurisdiction. And those items were not put into the code that they were voted on. There was no edits made to the code that was put forth. So at that time, it would have been a matter of the Board of Trustees either saying they weren't ready because they wanted to wait and look at that sort of that comment, or to ask for that to be amended. And as I understand it, the only amendments that were made were just minor in regards to the paragraph about the jurisdiction piece, just solidifying. One of the items that was left at one point was the University Assembly wasn't listed in parentheses as one of the University Assembly. So that was edited to include the University Assembly in there. And so at that point, it was, you know, they received the resolutions, as I understand it, they were put forth to the president, but that they were not, they didn't make those changes into the code before it went to the floor. And therefore, what they voted on was the code that had the jurisdiction with the Student Campus Life VP, but with the ability for the University Assembly and any assembly to make recommended amendments in a similar sort of fashion. So.
Yeah. I mean, one of the reasons I asked was because, you know, I think it's notable. And also, you know, what we've been hearing from the council's office and from the president is that one of the reasons that they were concerned about making these changes, I'm not asking you to explain this, Brandon, you know, but or make this consistent, but in what we've been hearing the whole time is that one of the reasons for the changes is because the students wanted changes of the kind that we had. And given the unanimity that we saw among the governance bodies here, that where students were participating saying we don't want it, the jurisdiction to be changed from the University Assembly, it seems somewhat ironic that, you know, when the students are speaking with one voice, that the administration and the trustees basically said, well, that's not what we want.
Thank you. Risa, any comments in regards to that? Again, I think ultimately what the code they were given was that had this jurisdiction with the Student Campus Life, and the, you know, some clarification was provided several times. You know, it's been a long, arduous process, you know, that the CJC information as far as jurisdiction, the code that was put forth at one point had the Student Campus Life piece in there. That was what was put forth by the CJC, and then understanding that there were some clerical concerns whether that was what was meant to be put forth. But ultimately, the code that was given to the Board of Trustees had that jurisdictional piece in there. I'll recognize Nick.
Thank you, Brandon. Sorry, I'm a little bit slower because I'm trying to attend both meetings right now. But so I just wanted to echo what Risa said and just add that I think that we did, and actually we had all three assemblies send the resolutions that were passed to President Pollack. And I know for a fact that there were that they were communicated to the Board of Trustees, because as we all know, Logan also did get 5 minutes at that meeting. So I just think it's quite unfortunate that the Board of Trustees disregarded these letters. I do think we came out with a code that was better than what was initially proposed. I think there was a lot of compromise that was done on both ends, so I'm very happy to see that. However, I do find it just a little bit disheartening that, you know, this all was pushed through so quickly in this pandemic, and really the voice of the three constituent assemblies that voted on this didn't seem like it was really being heard. But with that being said, I feel like, you know, there's no point for me to really dwell on this anymore. I think what's done is done.
Thank you, Nick. I think that to your point, as far as the revisions, we are in the point where it is now, and now it's kind of a moving forward piece. So recognize Jen.
I struggle with the not being heard piece because I argue this with my students all the time. Like, you'll be heard, but you just might not always get exactly what you want. And there's a piece of the balance that Nick recognized at the end. And I was appreciative that there was a balance. And obviously, I didn't get everything I wanted either, right? And that is part of this democratic process. So I feel like we have been heard, and I feel like we've been given multiple opportunities to be heard, and I'm thankful for that. And I'm just glad we can move forward now, and I'm excited to hear about what the next steps are in working with Vice President Lombardi and the CJC moving forward.
Thank you, Jen. I'll echo your statements in regards to, I think, everyone that I spoke to independently about this code felt that they got something, but not everything, and that it does ultimately kind of feel that, yes, to your point, there is that democratic process, and I think that's ultimately where a lot of it landed, in that everyone got a piece that they felt addressed part of it, but not everyone got everything that they needed. So thank you, Jen. Recognize Robert?
Yeah. I'm just wondering, is this the only document they adopted? I still don't know what the status is of the rules for maintenance of public order. I still don't understand what the relationship is between this document and the document the faculty considered on December 1st in terms of academic freedom, freedom of speech and expression. And I find it very strange that there's no references. There are cross-references in this document to the academic integrity piece and to the policy 6.4, but there's no cross-references or incorporation of any other documents, such as the academic freedom piece or the rules for maintenance of public order. Does anyone know what's going on?
Thank you, Robert. Recognize Risa and then Barb.
Yeah, I can speak at least to the statement on academic freedom, you know, and freedom of speech and expression. We were given the information that we, meaning the Senate, that the Board of Trustees could vote on that separately, and if necessary later than the Student Code of Conduct and Procedures. That's on the agenda again this Wednesday for the Faculty Senate. I don't know if there will be time to vote on the proposed statement, which may be amended. If it's not voted on Wednesday, it will be voted on in the Senate next month. I think it's January 20th. I'm not positive of that date, but that's the date that sticks in my mind in terms of the January date. But I think that Bob raises a good point about the connections between the two, and that assuming that that statement is approved by the trustees, the Senate, and then the trustees, I think that would be a really good point to say, even though we have now a new student code of conduct, it may be important to amend it to make a reference to anything that was adopted afterwards. So I think that's a good thing for us to put on the agenda. I don't know anything about the rules of public order or whether those are being considered separately.
Thank you, Risa. I recognize Barb.
Yeah, Risa covered what my understanding also with respect to the academic freedom is that there's a Q&A that the board or that was published in connection to the announcement of the board decision. And my understanding also is that academic freedom statement is going to be decided at a later time, or voted on at a later time by the board. The regulation for the maintenance of public order, Bob, you and I have been around and around on this before. I don't think it's not, and I'm going to just say counsel's office should answer your question there. I believe it's sufficient that there are regulations that maintain public order, and I think that's what's required, but you should follow up with counsel's office, I guess, if you have those questions.
Thank you. Marissa?
Just a quick clarification question. So my understanding is that the plan is for the code to take effect in fall of 2021. However, I did notice on the FAQ that there seems to be a possibility that will happen sooner. So I just sort of wanted to ask the group if anyone had any additional insight on that, or if we feel like it's probably going to be fall 2021. And then sort of as an addendum to that question, I don't know if anyone has thought about when it is implemented, is that going to be, you know, let's say it's September 1st, 2021. Does that mean any charge brought after that point? Are folks who are already in the conduct process sort of grandfathered into the new code and we're going to have a bifurcated process? Just thinking about advising clients and wondering how that's going to work, if anyone knows.
Yeah, thanks, Marissa. That's a great question. In regards to the time frame, the code states that it must be in place by fall of 2021, but that at this point it lies with the VP of Student and Campus Life as to whether or not he would implement that before the fall of 21. So it's really going to be more in his court at this point as to what his timeline is when he can effectively get that implemented. So, and I believe if I recall correctly, there's a statement about the notification before the document goes is finalized. I believe it's a 60 days of notification before finalized. So that may be there to speak to that aspect of it in regards to clients that were previously in the process and then the transition of the code happening. So I think that's going to be going to lie primarily with the VP of Student as Campus Life to organize that sort of transitional time frame and how that would work.
Yeah, thank you, Brandon. I guess I read all that and that makes sense to me. I guess I'm just trying to figure out if anyone has had any conversations with him or just has like kind of a broad sense for what the rough plan is, or if that's really all the guidance we have right now.
Yeah, the only guidance is that document, and I'll recognize Barb. It's just that as I said, Ryan Lombardi did reach out to me the day after just to inform me that it had been adopted, and just stress the importance of collaboration with this organization and the University Assembly and how the transition process will take place. I recognize Barb.
Yeah. Thanks, Brandon. I think. What I know is that people are aware of that question, Marissa, and know it's important. And I'm sure, among other things, that council's office will be attentive to that. Some of you may know, I know the University Assembly is aware. My term as interim JA is concluding, and a gentleman named Dr. Kevin Williams, has been appointed to serve as a student affairs consultant, and he will be assisting in helping to make this transition. And so many of these will be issues, including the effective date of it, that he will work with Student Campus Life and other appropriate groups on campus to try to ensure a smooth transition. And if I could, I would just take a minute quickly to say how much I've appreciated the opportunity to work with this group. But again, so I'll just leave it there. That's all I know, Marissa, is that the question is on people's minds. So.
Thank you, Barb. Appreciate that. And Jen had made a note in the chat there and wondering if we might invite Ryan Lombardi to a meeting in the spring. So that'll be something we may want to discuss in our piece and as we talk to the transition plan. Any other comments or questions in regard to that piece, or we can move on to the transition pieces? It seems like that's where the conversation has kind of moved towards, if that sounds reasonable.
Can I just ask, because it does relate to the transition piece and also specifically what Barb just said, who is this interim person? Is this somebody's at Cornell? I mean, if you could give us some background, because this is the first time I've heard about it, even though it might have been announced and I just didn't hear about it.
I don't know that it has been fully announced at this point. I mean, I don't think there's been a broad announcement, but his name is Kevin Williams. He has 21 years of experience in student affairs and was previously at the new school in a vice president role. and has been retained again as in a consultant role for the university.
Thank you, Barb. And it was an item that was brought to the University Assembly, as you know, typically the University Assembly would be involved in the process of selecting a JA, and being that Barb's interim appointment would be ending and we didn't have a code at the time, VP Lombardi didn't see that there it being feasible to start a JA search in this semester. And so has solidified this position, this person to come in and help in this transitional timeframe, so that it allows for the formalized process of hiring of the positions that are outlined in the new code to be done with the code being written and adopted, as opposed to theoretically saying this is what the code might be, but here's what it is today. So this sort of is, it is a transition between the transitions, if you will, which is, I think there's going to be some challenges that we'll have to talk to and address there. But yeah, so it has not been a formalized announcement in regards to that, but it was brought to the attention of Logan Kinney, and she brought that to the University Assembly for a conversation.
And I would just say we have had some opportunity to overlap, and I'm very excited on behalf of Cornell. I think he's very attentive to many of the things that this group has expressed a desire for, including alternative dispute resolution and more informal ways of resolving cases. I think it's terrific that he has the breadth of experience in the student affairs area, including prior responsibility for conduct. So I think he's really uniquely situated to help the university move, do this transition, guide the university through this next transition. And of course that will, require and involve a lot of collaborative conversation with everybody in this group and with others across campus. And I hope people will be open to speaking with him and giving him the benefit of your history and wisdom and being open to what, really what the possibilities are at this point.
Thank you, Barb. So unless there's further discussion about the current code and the adoption of it, I might recommend that we move to the next item on the agenda and discussing the transition plans in working with this document. So I know that Jen has already put in as a suggestion, potentially looking at inviting Ryan to attend this meeting. And I want to just stress again that, as Ryan spoke to the collaboration, it was about a collaboration. What can he do to work with the CJC and the University Assembly to foster that collaboration as this code transitions over into the Student Code of Conduct, and some conversation about, he's very open to what we might view as a good way in doing so. And of course, I would expect him as the person who this would ultimately fall on to provide us with some suggestions and ideas from his lens. So it might open the floor to conversation in regards to the transition plan and how we might best work that collaboration. And perhaps since we do have quorum here today, it might make sense to try to take a vote on whether we might look to have VP Lombardi attend a meeting in the session in the spring. That'd be an opportunity for us to get that sort of solidified so that we could begin to work on that. And we have to talk a little bit about our calendar for the next semester, which hopefully will be a little less crazy. And we can finally set a sort of standing meeting. So recognize Jen.
Kat suggested in the chat VP Lombardi and Dr. Williams, and that might be a nice combination. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Kat.
Any other thoughts or suggestions or concerns about the transition?
Sorry, could I just motion that if we vote, sorry, I forgot to raise my hand.
Go ahead, Nick. No worries.
Could I just motion that we separately invite Lombardi and Dr. Kevin, I forgot the last name, sorry. Could we just have a separate vote on those? Because I am in favor of inviting one, but not the other.
Thank you, Nick. At this time, if I may recommend that we look to continue that conversation and or make motions to start working towards an invite for one or both of those parties.
I mean, I'll move that we, you know, I think it's fine to, I think it's a good idea just to vote separately. So I'll move that we invite Ryan Lombardi to meet with us in the spring of 2021 at one of our earlier meetings in the spring, if possible.
Do I have a second for that motion?
Second.
You have a second? All right, any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of inviting, and again, we can formalize a date at a later time, but extending an invitation to Ryan Lombardi to attend the CJC meeting next semester, please vote yes or no. If you abstain, please just message me. For abstentions. Okay, looks like we have five yes, one no, and one abstention. So with that, the motion passes to invite Ryan Lombardi.
Brandon, would we have to vote on the new guy? Because wouldn't he just come the way Barb comes as an ex officio member?
So from a technical standpoint, Dr. Williams is not filling the JA position, so wouldn't therefore take on the JA sort of role in that regard. So it would be a separate sort of perspective.
Got you.
And I recognize Nick.
I move to invite Dr. Williams to the next meeting. Or not the next meeting, I guess we'll finalize which one, but to invite him next semester.
Thank you. Do I have a second on that?
I'll second Nick's motion.
Okay. Any discussion there?
I have a question, and I actually think it's a good idea to invite him, but I'm still not completely clear on what his role is and what consultant means. Does that mean actually like an independent contractor consultant role? Is he on the payroll at Cornell? I'm just unclear. I'm very interested in hearing what he has to say and to having a conversation with him. I just would appreciate it if anybody could explain that to me, what that means, the consultant part of it.
Thank you. Would anybody like to provide any clarification there? Jen?
I know a little bit in higher ed, when there's a high level official that leaves a position, they often bring in consultants in the interim while they do a more thorough search. So I'm questioning if it's something like this. They often bring in people to review and look at office structure and how things are done and how the reporting is, that then they hire somebody new. So I don't know, Barb, if that's the case in this position, but very often in higher ed, high level transitions happen this way.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Barb.
Yeah, I think what Jen and Brandon has just said is really about what I know, which is, you know, I think it would have been impossible to do a cert. I was finishing up. I was planned to finish up my interim stint at about this time, and clearly it's hard to do a search when you don't know if you're going to have a new code or what the new code is going to say. And my understanding is that Ryan didn't feel he could do a search and have it be an effective search at this time. And Kevin, and I think they really just wanted to take some time and figure out, it's a significant change, and to figure out how it's going to work. And I think they really want to engage with the groups on campus that have historical information and perspectives on it. And, I would hope that this group would be, it's important. I hope this group will be open to hearing from Ryan and Kevin. Ryan's got the vision. He's the vice president. It's his job to articulate the vision for student affairs, including conduct, which is a huge piece of that. And this, and they've hired a consultant instead of hiring a new interim judicial administrator for what will probably be one semester, or, you know, one semester in a little bit. And so I just, again, I hope this group will be open to giving both of those people, hearing from them and giving them the benefit of your thoughts. It's I think it's a wonderful, I know some people disagree, many people in this room disagree with the decision. I think it's an exciting opportunity for Cornell, and I hope people participate in it, in the ongoing conversations about how to have it be effective. I think that's the gist of the agenda item.
Thank you, Barb. I recognize Risa.
Yeah, I mean, my questions are informational. I'd like to know what we're talking about. I have no problem, and in fact, I think it's a great idea to invite Dr. Williams, since he's been, you know, named as something. And this is information I think we can certainly ask for, to say we'd really like to know what is Dr. Williams' role? What does it mean to be a consultant? A consultant about what? Is this an interim position? I just don't know. And that's all I'm saying, is I don't know. I have no problem having him come. In fact, I think it's great. Anybody who's going to be involved in helping to put this new code into effect, we should talk to, period, and have an interaction and develop relationships. So Barb, you know, there is no judgment here. I'm just asking for information. As I said, I'm in favor of this. And it sounds like we just don't have that information, and I'd like to have it. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and honestly, so I just, in the interest of saying what's on my mind, Reese, I said it after you spoke, but I actually was just, and Nick, you don't owe it to me and you don't owe it to the group to explain why. I just was honestly having a hard time understanding why anybody in this group wouldn't want to hear from the Vice President for Student and Campus Life, to whom this really important function is now going to report. So that, Risa, it actually wasn't directed at you. And I can't answer some of your questions, of course, because I don't know exactly what the details are of the relationship, but I do believe, as Jen said, it's a pretty standard transition when you have a higher ed and other places too. You have a transition in leadership, and sometimes instead of hiring a new person directly, you hire a consultant in between to help think through what the issues are, what the staffing will be, what the budget's going to be, what the work is going to be. We have new offices with new responsibilities, and I think that's what a consultant does. I believe he's hired for I don't know what his term was. I was hired, for example, as the interim. I was hired with we estimate this will be 6 to 9 months, and it ended up being 9 months. So I think that is. Sometimes there's some flexibility in terms of the length of the appointment.
Thank you, Barb. I recognize Kat and then Nick.
Yeah, from what I can gather, it doesn't seem like anyone on the Zoom call has the specific information that we really need to answer your question, Professor Lieberwitz. But I do agree, like, technically we're still on the motion to vote on just whether or not to invite him. I'm happy to vote on this. I think it's definitely important to hear from everyone who's going to be involved in this process. Again, like, collaboration is super necessary. We're going to be going through a hard transition, and I think it's just best that we all hear from everyone. And I'm happy to make a motion after this motion has been voted on, that as the CJC, we formally request information about Dr. Williams and his role, the specifics of his role in this process moving forward.
Thank you, Kat. Recognize Nick.
Thank you. I'm just briefly to respond to Barb's question. The reason that I voted, I'm very much in favor of inviting Dr. Williams and any other stakeholder. The reason that I hesitate to vote in favor of inviting others is just out of principle. I've spoken to the executive board of the GPSA, and we've decided that we believe that the administration has ample platform to talk to students and constituents, whereas people that are not in those positions do not have the ability to massively reach out and disseminate information. So it is just As a matter of principle, we have decided to provide our platforms to people that do not have ways to reach out to everyone, as opposed to people that do. But I very much understand and appreciate that the CJC decided to invite Ryan Lombardi, and that's not something that I will publicly like condemn or say that I'm against it. Just as a matter of personal principle, I would prefer to invite people that don't have ways to disseminate information.
Thank you, Nick. Any further discussion in regards to the current motion on the floor to invite Dr. Kevin Williams to a meeting next semester? Okay, seeing none, if we can vote on that. All those in favor of the motion to invite Dr. Kevin Williams next semester, you vote yes. All those opposed, no. All right, and looks like a vote of seven yeses, no noes, and no abstentions. That passes. So I will work with Gina, and we'll work to identify a calendar, some timeframes in which we can invite those individuals, provide them the opportunity to come individually or as one meeting, depending on their availability. Yes, Gina, go ahead.
If I may suggest, once you set your calendar for the standing meetings for the spring, we might just use those as the dates and see if there's one that's better than another for either or both of them.
Okay. Thank you. Recognize Risa.
Yeah, I wanted to just express a preference for meeting with them separately if possible, because it's just you find out different things from people when you have a time you can devote to getting to know them and having their ideas, as opposed to people, if I think they come together, they think that we're asking them to come as a team, I think, in a certain way. So I would express a preference for having them come separately, and I can make it a motion if necessary. And I recognize too that calendars are the nightmare that we're all experiencing, you know, of trying to figure out when what works. But I would at least move, let me just make a motion. I would move to invite them separately to come to meet with us at different meetings.
Okay. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
All right. Any discussion? Yes, Jen?
Yes, I would argue that if they came together, we'd know they both heard the same thing at the same time. And Ryan might be able to hear a little bit about Kevin's ideas, and they would both hear what we were thinking. And so we can vote on this, and I'm going to vote against it. But the only reason I would think to bring them together sometimes is seamlessness and efficiency. And then maybe, you know, I would say if we met with them together and had questions or follow-up for either, we could circle back to them. I'm just trying to like think in my head when I have meetings with folks, sometimes it's easier to hear their perspective together and then be able to disseminate the information. Dr. Williams or Kevin, I'm sure we can call him Kevin, doesn't know anything about us, right? He's brand new. And I think sending him to a meeting like this without any context could be really hard. Just my thoughts.
Thank you. I recognize Nick.
Thank you. I'd just like to argue in favor of Risa's motion, just because I think that it's not on us to provide a platform for Ryan and Kevin to talk. I'm sure that they both will have communicated and arranged how they're going to, you know, work on this together. So I don't think we want to, you know, use our time for them to coordinate things between each other. I'm sure they're going to have that before. And then I think we're a welcoming bunch. I think it would be nice for Kevin to have his first interaction with us independently, so that we can kind of get to know him as an individual, separate from that unified front that they're going to be presenting with Ryan. And I'm sure that we're going to have plenty of opportunities to talk to them together, but I think there is some value into getting to talk to them separately.
Thank you. I recognize Kat.
I agree with both Nick and Jen and Risa that there are like pros and cons here. I think personally what I think would make sense is like maybe we have one meeting, it's just like an introductory meeting, they can go over the basics of everything and this would be together, because I think there's also value in not in being efficient, like there's value in being efficient and not wasting time. If we're asking them a question, they give us an answer that the other person has already answered, and then they didn't know they already heard this answer, so we were just spending time in that area. But then after that, I think it's always helpful to like pull them in independently, because Dr. Williams is probably more of a specialist in this area than BB Lombardi. BB Lombardi is like, you know, the visionary, he has the big picture stuff. I think the questions we would have for them would be different, which is why I'm in favor of later in the process, like still like early in the year, but later in the process, meet with them independently. But at first being able to have that introductory meeting together. And I know this is different from the motion in, that was proposed in the first place, but that's just my thoughts.
Thank you, Kat. And I would echo there's you know, validity in all of those statements. And, you know, as you look at it, we will likely not be having just one conversation with Ryan Lombardi and or just one conversation with Kevin, that this is going to be an ongoing conversation. Hopefully not every week, as we saw this past semester. So a little bit more structured and less often, but I think there will be continuing conversation with both of those groups. And I think that there's reasoning behind both perspectives. And it may be something to consider whether we wanted to make that decision in their separate attendance now, or look to get some more clarity on the roles and oversight. And that may be something perhaps, you know, I might recommend this as a possible item to table and then look to gather a little bit more information about what the dynamic between Ryan Lombardi and Kevin Williams is going to be in the coming semester, so that we have a better understanding of how that might work best. So just a thought, but there is a motion on the floor. And if there any more discussion in regards to the motion? Okay. Seeing none, again, the motion on the floor is to invite VP of Student Campus Life and Kevin Williams as separate invitations to invite different meetings. So all those in favor, yes. Those no, press no. And abstentions, please message me. All right. And again, this is all dependent on the calendars. Yes, correct. All right, it looks like we have four in favor, one no, and two abstentions. So with that, the motion does pass. Okay. All righty. Still in the transition plan conversation, any further discussion or items to be discussed? I believe, Kat, you'd mentioned the potential of another motion, but I could be lost in where that motion was, if it already got addressed or not. Okay, so moving on to the next agenda item, the future of the CJC. Obviously, as I've noted here, we will be involved in the transition conversations. That is the intention, as long as this committee continues to want to be a part of the conversations and the transition. And then the question then comes, you know, beyond the transitional piece, as we look to the new year, what is the role that the CJC plays? Obviously, I think some of it will be determined from the University Assembly, because we are a committee of the University Assembly. So we will ask for their guidance and understanding as to what they see. But I did receive, you know, several, you know, as I mentioned, as the code revisions were getting close to finalized, and there I did a lot of reaching out to folks independently to get perspectives on the code as it was. And I, you know, one question I asked quite often of folks is, you know, where do you see the role of the CJC in the future? I tried to remember to ask everyone. I don't know if I did, but I got varying answers, you know, that, you know, some looking at, you know, that the idea that the committee just continues as it is in providing guidance on the code and amendment recommendations to the University Assembly as it currently does. In essence, sort of shifting the role of the CJC more to behave or interact like other committees from the assemblies that are less of seen as sort of the entities that the governing bodies, if you will, but really just committees and recommendations, committees that provide recommendation based on a certain area of topic. And the topic for this could remain the codes and judicial committee topic. Received another recommendation that was provided that the CJC may be able to do that and potentially look at becoming a body which helps and provides guidance to other assemblies as it pertains to their bylaws and charters, as there can often be conversations regarding those as to how they're applied and disagreements around what they say and how they say it. And so the recommendation was given as well. You know, if you have folks that have a strong passion for this sort of a topic or conversation, that those might then be applied to providing guidance and assistance to other assemblies. So I thought that was an interesting recommendation as well. But again, these are just thoughts and ideas. Wondered if anyone had any other input or ideas as it pertains to the future of the CJC. And obviously, you know, we're not gonna decide the future of the CJC right now, but just thought it would be a good conversation topic. Recognize Risa? Oh, you're on mute.
Yeah. So I see that in the chat that Robert Platt wrote, how about the hearing panel staffing and guidance? So that's still in there, right, in terms of the UA's role in the hearing panel. So there is still that. You know, the other thing that I think that we should be considering is whether our committee could be useful as this code is implemented in taking up a project of evaluation. I'm using that term not formally, but in terms of kind of a sense of a committee that will be looking to see how is this working, you know, and I don't know exactly how one would do that, but that would be in our interest to get a sense of how things are working under a new code, so that since we do report to the University Assembly, we could report to the University Assembly about our ideas about what's working well, what's not working well, where the jury's still out, so to speak. You know, I think that would be nice for us to maintain a connection to the code in that way. So we'll have more time to do that since nobody will be telling us to overhaul the code again, hopefully very, very soon. And the other thing I've thought about over the years is that I think that there's a real confusion that comes up on campus a lot in terms of the kind of the connections between different offices and different rules and regulations. So that there may be ways in which we can look to see how does the code connect to other regulations on campus, right? How do we, to pick up on what Robert Platt said earlier, how do we make sure and kind of look at the connections between a free speech and academic freedom statement and the code? So kind of an oversight vision so that we can then be saying, how can we make this better?
Thank you, Risa. I recognize Marissa.
Yeah, kind of to Risa's point, but building on it a little bit, one thought is that there is this new advisory committee that is going to be working with Vice President Lombardi. You know, I know that there are going to be representatives from the SA and the GPSA, but I imagine there are a lot of other empty seats, and I wonder if some of the folks on this committee could either be helpful in serving on that committee, given the robust knowledge and passion that I think everyone has here, or maybe identifying other people who might be well suited for that So that's just one thought.
Thank you, Marissa. And just to clarify for those not as familiar with the revision, there's the piece about the codes and review committee, which would be made up of members of the SA and GPSA, as well as the director position that will be ultimately coming online. So, you know, the code itself does not dictate the amount of people that are on that committee. It just says that it's made up of these folks. And it also doesn't exclude. So I think that's an interesting perspective to think about as to whether there may be opportunity in that committee. Okay. Well, I think it's something to kind of think about and ponder upon over this this holiday break that we all get to kind of hopefully step away from things a bit. I do think that we should look to identify a meeting, a standing meeting. And, you know, if I look at all the meetings that we had, this Monday afternoon meeting has tended to be the one where we've gotten the most. Now that changes, I know, for some of our, for the student assembly and GPSA members, as your schedules and calendars may adjust. So I think it's something we might want to consider, but I would recommend we should try to set a standing meeting for next semester so that we're not trying to do that over email in the break. And then if we do it and then all of our student assembly and GPSA members cannot make that meeting, we could look to alter that and after the fact. So I might make a recommendation that we look to have a motion for a standing meeting for the next semester, and then, you know, look to adapt it if possible. Recognize Barb. Barb, you don't have to come to these meetings anymore, though.
Sorry, I actually wanted to speak to something else, but not about this. So I'm sorry, I shouldn't have. I raised my hand prematurely, realizing time is at the end here. But please finish, and then if you could come back to me, that would be great. Sorry.
Yes, Gina.
In one of the models that's been used in the past is since the UA meets on alternate Tuesdays from 4:30 to 6, to have it stagger with those so that it's the same slot, but that way it wouldn't conflict with the UA, and it's sort of the traditional slot for that meeting, if that's an option.
Good thought. Yeah, I think because I know Nick had mentioned that there's a exec meeting for the GPSA happening right now, so again, trying to not conflict with anything else, which I've not always done well this semester, acknowledge. So, but that might be a good opportunity. That works well for myself. So perhaps we look at that to alternate with the University Assembly. Anyone might make a recommendation for, again, I don't think us making this motion and finalizing a sort of standing meeting next semester kind of locks us in. We can always adjust it as needed. I see some ahas. Do we? Yeah, no, the class schedule pieces, no, we don't know those yet. And that's where I think we may need to adjust things in the next semester. But I do think it would be important to go ahead and get at least something set up for next semester. Recognize Kat.
I just had a question about alternating with the University Assembly meetings. I think the UA exec meets on those off weeks. Correct me if that's wrong, but I just want to make sure we're not conflicting with that as well.
I just offer that as an option. I know, I think the UA exec is four people. Maybe academic calendars might switch so that they, you know, I'm just offering that as a model that has worked in the past.
Any other thoughts or ideas? Again, it's the least favorite part of this sort of thing, is juggling all the calendars and getting a meeting set up. But there's also the alternative, you know, we can look to get a doodle poll. I think we've done that in the past, so that might be something we can do. Gina, maybe provide clarification. If we do that, is that something where we would need to then have a sort of vote afterwards, or can we just utilize the votes cast in the doodle poll, in essence, as people's votes for a specific time frame?
Absolutely. You know, whatever works, the will of the group, and then we'll just make that work.
All right. So maybe then we can go that route and send out a doodle poll. I'll identify sort of a few standing meetings, keeping it the options somewhat limited so you're not having to look at, you know, 15 different options at this time frame and that. Limit it, and then wherever we can find the most recurring, I would just urge those who maybe don't know their schedule to kind of just go, that seems good for now. And then, like I said, we can always adapt and adjust as the semester goes if necessary. All right, we've only got a couple minutes left here. So then I think I know Barb wanted to make a comment, so I recognize Barb.
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to come back, Brandon, I think you said earlier, there was a reference to the fact that Kevin doesn't have it, and he doesn't, is my understanding. He's not the judicial administrator or the interim position, but you know, the code is going to continue to operate through this coming semester. And so I hope that this group, it seems as though the spirit of the code would require there be a representative, or there would be a representative from the JA's office to serve as an ex officio member of this committee during the spring semester. I hope that will, I think that would be important for, you know, the integrity of the conduct system.
Great point, Barb.
And otherwise, I'll just say thank you again to everybody. It's been a pleasure, and appreciate all the work and the service that people do on behalf of this committee. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Barb, and thanks for all your help and guidance for myself throughout the process, learning everything as we go along. It's been really great having you here and helping out, and I wish you the best in your re-retirement. Enjoy stepping back into that. I think that is really, really kind of you to come in and help out and to commit so much time. You know, we've had a lot of meetings, a lot of conversations, so we really appreciate you being here consistently to help us and provide us with information throughout the process. So thank you all. Thank you so much. And I think that I think you make a very valid point about ensuring that for the time being that we continue to have a member of the JA's office. So you know, we're at our 5 o'clock. If maybe we could get a motion to extend by just a couple of minutes, we could perhaps get a motion for that to happen in the next semester and be able to vote on that. So that's not something we have to wait on.
A motion to extend by 5 minutes.
Okay, any second?
Second.
All right, any dissent?
To extend?
Yeah.
I don't dissent against it. I have to go. I have another meeting, but I'm all in favor of the suggestion. I think it sounds great.
Is that a motion, Risa, to have a member of the OJA joining our meeting?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do we have a second for that?
Second.
All right. Any conversation? Seeing none, all those in favor? All right, by a vote of 6 yeses, no noes, and 1 abstention, we will, the motion passes to continue to have a representative from the OJ on an ex officio role in this committee. So I look forward to that continued partnership throughout the semester. And I know you motioned to extend it 5 minutes, but we really just needed that 1 minute to get that done. So that wasn't up in the air for the next semester. So thank you for that recommendation, Barb. I greatly appreciate that.
Thank you.
So I guess that's probably going to be you, Christina. We look forward to working with you or whomever is the representative associated. That's up to your office and how you do that. But thank you all so much for your time and your guidance, your conversation, your patience, your suggestions, and your hard work to get us to where we are here today. And I want to encourage everyone to not look at this code revision as a defeat, but as an opportunity for us to understand how the university moves forward and how we can help to ensure and solidify that this code does represent the spirit of what we as the CJC hope that it does, and partner with those bodies that are going to be holding jurisdiction over that to ensure that we provide that guidance and that help as they begin that transition. So we've done a lot of great work here. It's not yet done. Plenty more to go until through the transition, and we have an opportunity as well to provide some guidance to the groups that are going to be doing so next semester. So thank you all so much for your time. And I think with that, if Make it. Thank you, Kat, for your comment. I appreciate that. It's been my pleasure learning all this and getting through. Perhaps we could get a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
All right. Second?
Second.
All right. With that, thank you all so much and have a happy holiday break and best to you and all of you. And again, happy re-retirement, Barb.
Thank you. Happy holidays, everybody.
Bye-bye.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.